Why so many embassies?
Would you like to join up each one of them?
Yeah.
I agree with
it. Ill, but not ill. And some are really out ill, and others who can't make it. So we simply share with you the joyous spirit, and after we finally get ourselves together, we'll get started on the agenda. If everybody has coffee, Ed, you have sugar and cream for your coffee.
Thank you, Carol. No, I like it black.
Oh, yeah. He's getting rid of that, isn't he?
Yeah.
Are we doing all right, huh?
Yeah, this is his last time around. He's not running against me.
Oh.
Don't dare like that.
Did he count some of the legs just walked in the door?
Don't challenge me.
Fresh size. But anyway, we get started. Just like all the spirit that we're in this morning. Okay. We have the minutes in front of us, or copy. Take another minute, please, to look at the minutes. Any changes or changes in the recorded portion of the minutes here, summary? If not, we'll pick up where we left off the last time. At the end of the session, you might recall, we had, after receiving the presentation, and I think, did we get through all of your reports, George?
Yes.
I thought we did.
Yes.
We got through the reports that we had planned the last time, as agreed upon. We got through them. We started at that point to discuss dialogue about them, and today it was agreed that we would come back and begin simply a discussion on the presentation, the facets of it, and continue the conversational part of it. Reading a minute, you might pick up a few starting points, ideas. One of the, Mr. Gene Brucker is ill. Dr. Hall?
Yes, that is correct, but Scott Gray can cover whatever it would be that Dean might otherwise have talked to.
All right. We're open now to discuss and continue where we left off concerning the four topical items on the agenda there, and I think they are correct as they are.
Carol, just to begin with, what is number one? What is the Lincoln Counseling and Guidance Program? I'm not too familiar with what the high school program is at Lincoln. I work for the adult school, but I want to mention here that in the city schools, the adult program, each adult school in San Diego has a credential counselor. And I think that at Lincoln and at some of the other schools, Memorial, San Diego, each of the counselors in the adult schools credentials. There's no we may have an advantage over the secondary people in that we don't have discipline problems, but we like to think that we're sensitive to the needs of the community. For instance, at Lincoln in the adult program, we're offering African history taught by Nigerians. We're also offering Afro-American history. And taught by Bob Russell, and we think we're we try to be concerned with the community and sensitive to the needs.
Right, that's for the adult program. The last time we got bogged down on the question that Tom Johnson had asked, I think it would be only proper to ask those from the school system if they have any further statement on that they want to mention. If not, we'll wait until it's raised or not raised.
Why don't you attempt to restate it, and I would like to have us talk to it.
All right. see if we can restate it. Someone want to try? George, you want to try?
Yes. I think he had it was a two-part question, and we kind of got we bounced from one to the other, one part to the other part. I think his first part of his time, of course, related to what is being done at Lincoln to what is being done at Lincoln to as it relates to change in the I think in the administrative system as it relates to change. And then after that was answered or responded to, the question would be, why did you find it necessary to make that change? Or why are you doing what you're doing now as a result of something that you didn't do before? That's in the area, I believe, Carol. I'm sorry I'm being really
general. That's close enough, and should I start responding to the question as stated? First, it should be known to all that California legislation and then major federal legislation established programs that are now about 3.5 years old. And Lincoln is one of the schools benefiting from these new programs as established that have major federal finances coming through the state offices, so that the state sets up guidelines as to how these particular programs, and we in education refer to them as categorical aid for a given category of student, shall be carried out. And these changes then are to use the added funds to carry out what we consider to be very worthwhile purposes, and they have only had a history of 3.5 years. So the changes we're talking about are largely financed with these additional funds. I want to be sure it's understood that some of the additional funds are also local tax-raised funds, but they are minor as compared with the rather large amounts of money that come to us from the federal government, but through state offices. Now, the other question is related to why educators, shall we say, whether we're just talking about ourselves or talking about educators on a state and national basis, have supported these programs that I'm referring to. It's basically the ESEA Title I, Elementary Secondary Education Act of 1965 is what we're basically referring to. Why should these have been established? And the reason was primarily what I would probably use the word pragmatic is based upon the results that we observed, namely that those students who themselves are poor, whose parents have little education, many of them come from minority groups, in many cases they have attended segregated schools, or the schools may be old and outdated, and many of these groups of course will overlap, and they are not exclusively, if you will, minority group members, but may be in the other categories as described, that students, children, members of these groups have in fact had a higher rate of dropout from our schools than is true of the total population. Many of these individuals have had lower, the average of the group has been lower in academic achievement. And I want to be sure we understand I'm not talking about all individuals, because there are many who are high achievers, as well as many who are very low achievers. But the average of the group has been lower than the average of the total population. And many of these individuals have failed to set appropriate goals for themselves, for their lives and their careers, or have had difficulty in achieving their career goal. Now, this is the background as to why educators would have given support to this Elementary Secondary Education Act of 1965 that is our chief funding for these special programs to help students. While I'm on it, I would like to also make the point that the laws require that the district shall select the schools to benefit on the basis primarily of facts available in the 1960 federal census related to average income of families in certain census tracts. The federal census information about unemployment or about welfare. These are factors that must be the prime determinant of determiners of which of our schools shall be those involved in the program. Once the schools are so identified, and this is our responsibility, then at each of the so designated schools, it becomes our responsibility to provide additional services and programs to help those individuals who apparently need the help the most. In other words, it is not a program that is for all 1,100 students at Lincoln. It is, Lincoln being one of the schools designated, it is for the 300 to 600 students at Lincoln whose educational needs appear to be the greatest are the ones who get the service.
Okay.
George?
Yeah, Carol. Now, that led to the part of the questions also which Tom brought in, the third part. What made it necessary for you to see this need? Or how did you come about seeing this need? It was stated by Mrs. Anderson 2 weeks ago that we have made changes and we are doing things now that we were not doing before. And Tom related his question persistently to, then why are you doing it now when you weren't doing it before? So why did you get these funds to use them when you did not do the same thing before? Or was it, okay, can you understand my
question? Well, but it's, part of the question it's basically what you're now touching on, George. At the earlier period, the funds available to help students at Lincoln were equal to the per student funds helping those in the other parts of the district. And as of that time, we were probably financing the program out of operating funds at the level of about $550 per pupil. And the students at Lincoln, on the average, would get their $550 as with those at Point Loma or Hoover or San Diego or any other school. As a result of the new legislation, additional funds were provided to be used, and the law says they must be in addition to the fair share going to these schools that otherwise was there. We can't reduce the $550 that Lincoln was previously receiving, but we were receiving funds in addition to that. And in the initial action, the funds were allocated on the basis of one-half the amount that was state average. And my memory was that the state average was 518, so that our half, or 16, so that our half was $258 or $56. But for the target pupil, now in the total of the schools, there were about 25,000 pupils, but the 40% regarded as the target would have been just over 10,000 pupils, and our initial grant was for $2,600,000. And this is and was, and we followed it very carefully, to be used in addition to the floor that must be maintained of the district's own general average for all schools must continue without diminishing at the schools getting the special categorical aid.
May I ask if we And I'll get Bob down again this morning and see if we can get it off this on this point and take it away, George, from the technical, the funds availability, the law and all this. I think they're in another area altogether. And see if I can get someone to state it or state it in a way that we can get away from that. Can I stipulate, and by stipulate meaning that we simply agree with Dr. Hall that monies were available and they are being utilized.
Right.
So we can stipulate that, we can all agree to that. We can stipulate further that the money made it possible to do certain things that they might have done otherwise if they had the money. We can stipulate that, and then we don't have to get locked down with that again. Then we're still left with this other thing, I think, that was agreed upon the last time, and Ed stated it, and some others stated it. And I think it has nothing to do with money, per se, and all of that. And I'd like to get away from that if we can, so we can talk about what is commonly felt with people, what I sense is underlying part of this, and if we can get the question out, or take a minute or two and get the questions raised kind of accurately or pointedly, then we might can get to whatever it is that we need to get to.
Yeah, I'd like to make a statement and then ask a question of Dr. Hall. Max Rafferty this morning is reported to have said that his office would not tolerate violence in the high schools or in the secondary schools of the state of California. In any high school or administration that did permit violence, their funds would be cut off. The extent to which this is legally possible, I have no way of knowing. Last week, Mayor Sam Yorty of Los Angeles said he was persuaded that outside communist agitators and others were, in an organized sense, about to move in on high school campuses and there repeat some of the episodes that have been experienced at San Francisco State. Third point, Fremont High School in Los Angeles was recently the scene of physical violence and enormous unrest, such that I understand the high school was finally shut down. I believe that the black student militant and the others, is in the nature of a kick in the shin and calling the attention of society to what they feel are defects, failures in the curriculum or otherwise. And in part, I'm beginning to get this from reading Soul on Ice and from a book called Black Rage. My question to you would be this: putting all of that together, do you see in your high schools any evidence of, coming from the students themselves, an expression that the curriculum is not tailored towards their needs, an expression that we need some Afro-American study or ethnic courses going, an expression that unless and until we begin quickly to accelerate change in the curriculum, that there's going to be a difficulty down here? And if you do see these things, what, if anything, is the administration doing to be responsive to these needs, which presently I suspect are being peacefully expressed, but I also would expect they will be violently expressed unless we react in time to them? A long statement and a series of questions.
Very good questions.
They relate to, not specific now, but they relate to generally what we're talking about. I think Ed is just being more direct than I would have possibly been myself. Ed just put it right bluntly into a question, and I think we can deal with that.
Let's get some reactions to that, and then if that crystallizes for us the general air of what we're trying to talk about, let's get some reactions to that.
Well, one of the questions, I think, was do we see evidence that the curriculum needs to be modified to be more relevant? And the answer is, of course. We've been working for 3.5 years to try to bring this about. That's what the whole effort is about. How to do it is a complicated and in other words, I don't know of anyone who has the wisdom to blueprint, because we're in an area where we need to try things out and find what is relevant and so forth. Now, specifically, what is being done, the greatest thrust of the effort is what I would call teacher training, teacher sensitivity. And it takes the form of in-service training programs directly with the teachers, and also during the course of the 3.5 years at the secondary level, we've developed 41 curriculum guides that are for the purpose of guiding teachers in how to proceed more effectively. Now, some of those relate to courses that youngsters take. The vast majority, however, relate more specifically to how teachers should deal with youngsters, with adults, with the total climate of the school in assessing what would be wrong.
I wonder though if the production of guides is really the answer. If I felt, and Mr. McJunkins could stand up in front of a black audience down in southeast San Diego and say that he was getting maximal feasible assistance from the system with his program, I would feel a lot better. If Dr. Hall, for instance, had been able to avoid talking about the figures and to answer Chaka's question with regard to, well, in terms that the people in the room really could relate to, I would feel that we were moving forward a little better.
Yeah, I don't think that a guide is an answer, but it's a step in a process. If your objective is to retrain teachers, you have to map out, first of all, where you're going, and then get groups of teachers together in around the guide as to what it is that needs to be done.
Building this on a on shaky attitudinal foundation does not sound.
This is true.
This is what I'm
but you should also be aware that we have used many, many people, and some of the people sitting right around here, we have made extensive use of community resource personnel in this process. Maybe, perhaps, would it be in order to...
I think not, Jack, if we could continue just to come and pull up George a minute. I saw, it was Art and Jerry, and then, oh, you were called first, so maybe you should reply first.
Reply to what? Oh, I just want to correct that. Brian, I don't actually have a program. I expect so nobody would be helping me in the program you were talking to. To set up the program, but let me put this whole thing in some kind of perspective. It just amazes me that we could talk 2 days around a question that's so plain and we never quite said. But when we talk about the fact that the district became aware of the fact that there was a differential in performance of children, that wasn't a bone of contention. Nobody ever argued about that. Everybody already knew that. The question behind the question was why? How come? There were two approaches. One said something like this: well, the child is disadvantaged. His parents are poor. He doesn't have magazines, and he doesn't have things. I've used this myself, read it many times, and really believed it. And so the reason the school is not performing better is that when the child comes, he's so far behind, he really never quite catches up. Summerfield up at the university put it like this: you blame the high school. Says the reason we don't do any better is because the junior high school gives us poor material. The junior high school says, well, the elementary school, and the other one says, well, it's the home you're going back into, on back to utero, and something's been wrong all the time. Others of us, and I belated the king of this opinion myself. It was after listening to many other people who talked about it, believe that the real thing that needed looking at was attitudes of staff, the whole community, everybody, towards the child, and that if you could get some change in this area, that you could improve performance. The compensatory education program, and don't tell me about the word, started out on the first assumption and is moving over towards the second one. Now, I'm not prepared to say how much movement has taken place, but I am prepared to say that at Lincoln and at other schools, much more attention this year is being paid to the second kind of thing, than was paid some 2 years ago when I first came with the district. And I hasten to say it's not because of something I did, it's just that in general I think that, well, maybe because of dialogue and because of more understanding people, the approach now is to do something about your personnel, to do something about their attitude toward children. And I think that's really the bone of contention. You need to do something about the child, give him more intensified reading and arithmetic, so you need to do something about your staff. And I think we're moving, I don't know how fast. Somebody has said it, but we are moving that way.
If we can keep it then in proper perspective, the one approach traditionally was something was wrong with the child, with all of the so-called disadvantages, etc. But it was the fault of the child. He wasn't learning, therefore it's his fault. Change, work on the child. You're saying you're moving the direction in society, and
this is my personal
right.
belief about your system. And I'm not saying anything about how fast.
I understand.
Anything like that. I just said that it seems to me more now attention is being paid to attitudes of people around
the approach to the child rather than the child.
I think
in that direction. All right, maybe we can get
okay,
in that perspective then. Wait a minute, George. We had two other hands here, Art and then Jerry.
Ed raised the question about the unrest existing in the San Diego high schools, and I don't presume it is at Lincoln, but I happen to work in the area of Hoover High and know that there's a growing group of students at Hoover who are discontent and have organized a group there. They're calling themselves United Students for Better Education. And their discontent focuses not only on curriculum, but what they feel is the poor quality of the counseling there. The impression I have is that the administration of the school is very apprehensive about the whole thing. They're uncomfortable, and especially when they found that the bulk of the group is in the upper 10% of the intellectual educational level of the school. And apparently there's the response at this point that has been an edict gone out that everybody who has long hair is going to have to cut their hair.
All right, let's keep it in this vein, Jerry.
I will have to support what Tom has said about teacher attitudes and sensitivity towards the students. But I wanted to ask Jack if he could tell the group specifically what kinds of courses that are ethnically related are actually in the schools in San Diego.
No.
Functioning now today. And who's teaching the
courses for students or for teachers?
For students and for teachers.
All right.
I mean, specifically I'm concerned about the students.
And I can't give you a rundown of all of them because I didn't come prepared for that. I'm for students. At the... In 11th grade English, this past summer, a group spent the whole summer developing plans for the teaching of literature that would incorporate or pay adequate attention to Negro authors. And there's a new text that goes with it, and this involved people of minority background doing the job, and made use of folks from the universities, colleges around as resource people. A similar thing was done with reference.
Are you saying that in?
It's operating now. Yes,
it's operating from then till now.
Yes.
The ingredient of the 11th grade English instruction.
Yeah. In U.S. history, a similar thing was done, except that the summer session was used as a basis for trying the course out while it was being prepared. And this involved students from San Diego High, Crawford, and Lincoln. I think one other, but perhaps Hoover.
I think
it
was so. This is now included this semester.
These are now operating.
Last summer, and the ingredient of the tried out course is now being incorporated in 11th grade instruction. No.
What does that mean, Paula and Jared, so we keep it answering her question? I'm not sure you're answering her question yet, but there you
are.
Now,
what schools are these in? These courses being
first, during the summer, there were four class groups at four schools, one to a school, one teacher to a school. And during our summer programs, when we've been doing this in many courses for considerable time, we have found it possible to teach a whole year of chemistry by 4 hours a day during the summer, and they get a full course unit. We've also been doing this for American history. The effort last summer was to first locate four class groups scheduled to take their 11th grade American history in the summer only, 4 hours a day for 7 weeks. And for these 120 or 30 students, they were taught a course that was American history with special emphasis on minority individuals' contributions. There were the four teachers involved in teaching the course and also in the preparation of its design. Bob Russell was employed exclusively as a curriculum writer, not to teach any one of the classes, but to help the four teachers as they taught. So this was a pilot run, and it did involve 130 pupils. Now, the transition from that which can be done as a pilot under summer conditions into the full-time operation is more difficult. But in the 11th grade history program, about 40% of the classes in all of the cities are teaching American history with a new approach that is using more of the original material. We have an arrangement with the Encyclopedia Britannica to make material on history available that goes back to the original source material and is pulled out in the form we want. And for these classes, about 40% of our 11th grade students and equal number of teachers are teaching by this method, and as a support to this approach in which they are going into depth in given areas rather than simply do a quick cover of the total survey. For these classes, we have purchased one of the history books, the author's cap, I don't know the exact title, but it's emphasis on the contribution of Negroes. Books have been bought to be part of this supplementary material, and really the whole course is taught not from a standard textbook, but from resource material. And for this purpose, in this area, the CAPS book is the resource material as it applies to this element, the contribution of Negro citizens to American history. And it's operative on approximately 40% throughout the district.
What about the emphasis on Mexican-American contributions in the district, too?
We're working on it, but are having more difficulty with material.
Well, could I ask you this also? What about the seniors who are going through the system this year? Are they getting any seminar courses, or are they getting any black lit, black history, social problems that are directed to the contemporary problems of Mexican-Americans and Indians and black people? Is this being taught?
Not to the degree that I described for the 11th grade.
And also, next question, are you going to very quickly take this into the junior high school level and start identifying the courses themselves by a title that is ethnically visible, for example, instituting black literature, Mexican-American literature, history, so that it's not just English 1A or whatever it is, or history, that the students can actually say, I'm taking black lit, or I'm taking black history, or Mexican-American
history. To date, we do not have any such course to offer.
Are your plans to move in the direction of ethnic identification? Of course.
Ethnic identification of instruction content, I am not aware of a commitment to have courses by unique title.
You could ask you why.
I personally question whether it is the best approach.
Do you want to finish just one thought and then we can get on back?
I really would like to, George, would you say why you personally question that this is the best approach? Now, we're talking about making things relevant to students.
Let's see if we can say this even plainer, Jerry. Are you asking whether or not this school district plans to have black history as such?
In other words, I'm saying
that brown history as such, specifically one, two,
social,
three.
Social
all right.
Time.
And his answer is no to that, you're saying,
well,
so why?
Let us talk in terms of required courses and elective courses. And you'd understand me on this,
right,
Jerry. For those courses that are the required courses, and the 11th grade American history is one of these, I believe that it is important that this be universal in its offering, and as we teach it at Lincoln or Point Loma or La Jolla, should be basically the same. And in this respect, I support what we are now doing to get, for all of them, all parts of the city, appropriate attention for the benefit of those who are black and brown students at a school like Lincoln, but also for a better understanding of the black and the brown for those who are students at Claremont and Mission Bay and what have you. So for the required courses, I believe it is best a part of, rather than a unique course. Now, so if I can leave the required and come to elective, and now I'll give you a different answer than the one I gave you before, I would anticipate that there will be, in the relatively near future, the possibility of an elective course in English on black contributions to literature. This I would anticipate, but it probably will be a course offered as an elective in two or three or four schools only, and there may not be. Now, we aren't going to say it can't be, but I'm really saying the odds are that there would not be 30 students at Mission Bay who would want to take this as their elective course at the 12th grade. So I was, when you asked the question, I was primarily thinking of those that are the required courses. And at the junior high, most of the courses are in the required list. We don't primarily get into electives until the ninth grade and beyond. So this is my reason.
Hold on, yeah, we gotta go. Yes.
Mr. Butler mentioned something about communism in school and this and that. We own black and brown, and we forgot about the red, the Indian. He's a part of America, in fact, he's more so. Anyway, let's come to the point. We will have to put black curricula in all of the schools in the United States. It has to be taught to white America as a part of a national subject to all, in order for white America to get a better understanding of black America, brown America, and everybody else's part in our society, who is very much American. We have to, they have to be taught. This has to be a part of their curriculum. Everybody's curriculum. It must be a part of the school system, period. All over, or we will have continuous rights. They gotta be known for what they are, not a little bit of tokens here and teach a few there. Teach everybody. If white America do not know what black America is about, then they will never understand them and treat them as equal.
I say yes, and I'm saying that's what I thought I was saying, is the movement now going into 11th grade.
Let's make it national. Let's make it big. This is why we're having riots.
But you have to start at a given point and expand it to be effective.
Yeah, well, you don't have to put out a few crumbs. Just pass this book. We pay taxes, manufacture books, and make sure that it is a part of the school system. Did you hear what I say, sir? It has to be a part of the school system,
yep.
Sir.
I heard it.
That's the way it's got to be.
Herself, Ben George.
I'd like to make a statement and then talk a little bit about FOOC. The program, and it's, we, you know, getting away from it a little bit. There's a question here that does it, and I'm talking about the Mexican American cultural differences. Is the program taking into consideration the cultural lag of the Mexican American student brought about by cultural dichotomy, the partial disintegration of his parent culture, and the incomplete acceptance of the majority culture by the Mexican American? Again, I see everything, while we've taken the blame off the child, I hear from some teachers the blame is in the parent's home again. so I wonder if we're not zeroing in on where, you know, the blame is, or not that the parent can't help, but if he is caught in this dichotomy, it's very difficult. The other thing is that they had a Black History and Mexican American Book Day at State a couple of weeks ago that was absolutely the most disgraceful thing as far as Mexican American. They had two books on Mexican Americans. And I talked with the history professor there, and she said that the publishing houses really don't care. The publishing houses, are, as far as Mexican Americans are concerned, are in the East Coast, and they don't even know what Mexican Americans are. I wonder how much pressure the city schools and any city schools in the Southwest, the educational system in the Southwest, is putting pressure on these publishing houses, and both regular publishing houses and textbook publishing houses. The other thing I'd like to know, is there grants available to teacher writers? Because let's say a teacher, you know, any writer that puts out a book, a teacher can't teach and write a book. Whereas if she or he has this potential, is there a grant available where he can devote a year or two to writing these books from the Southwest? Again, I refer to Mexican American, I'm sure the Black has the same need, and Indians and everyone has the same need. I think there should be grants available to teacher writers to put these kind of books out.
Just got a quick answer to that specific question, you can go back to the others. Is there such a method we know of in San Diego that San Diego can participate in, and getting grants to write history, Mexican American or Spanish, whatever you want to call it?
I am not aware of it being available at the local level, and it should, in fact, be a state effort, because when you get into the textbook area, it should. This is the type of thing that should be supported by the California State Department of Education rather than us doing ours and Fresno doing theirs and Bakersfield doing another that would not get sufficient support to achieve the goal that Mrs. Chacon is talking about.
Frank, did you want to add anything at that point before we go back down the corner?
Not to that point. I wanted to raise a new one.
Well, hold up a minute.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
some other reaction about what
Estelle has said. The need is for materials about Mexican Americans. There is no need for special material now about Blacks. Since the whole civil rights movement followed by all the incidences of 67 and so forth, the market now, I guess we'd all agree that plenty of books now that are available.
But
you got a different thing about Mexican Americans, and it might be that we need to go to the state of, we need to think in terms of somebody make an application for a grant. I do believe it could probably be.
Mexican American history.
No.
I'm talking about the attitudes built right into the books. I've gone through some books that they're using in some of the projects with minority students. That by God, it looks like they're advertising for the National Rifle Association, and this is a first grade book. And I didn't bring it with me, but I have it at home. And it is absolutely, by the third grade, you know, they can teach them how to use hand grenades. And this is a book by a behavioral sciences firm. I've finally taken it to where they might do something about it, maybe. But I think that where the attitudes are built up, I don't even care about Mexican American history. I'm talking about the cultural thing, which can be built up from the first grade on up, where the counselors would have something to work with, you know, not this complete defeatist attitude in the first grade.
Then, on that point,
statement, you mentioned the state should do it. It's the state's responsibility. That's the most effective place to do it. Well, within recent months, I know it's been brought to your attention that who has the responsibility locally? Who stands up, makes waves, hollers, and gets it done? If the state hasn't done it, I don't think it ought to be your responsibility and that of Dr. Taylor or Dr. Hornback to set it as a personal objective and move out, not be afraid of the system. I'm sure there's a lot of fear built into this. You've got to operate according to certain proper standards and roles and so forth. But I think we're going to have to surmount some of these hang-ups in operating within the system. If many school boards had started hollering for such a program within the last year, you wouldn't be on the spot here today with regard to not having such a program coming downstream.
Could I just very quickly touch on it? We may not have made as big a wave as you think we should, but we've been making some waves. And only to one point. San Diego is a member of the Great Cities Research Organization in Education. There are either 16 or 18 of us nationally who are in this organization. One of their working committees is on the issue of racial equality. And I happen to be a representative serving on that. One of our chief efforts within the past 2 months was related to the first round of reporting concerns. At the meeting of the total organization back in the East in December, there was special conference with publishers on the standards that we were going to insist on for the adoption of textbooks. And our input to that was on the need for it being all of the racial minorities, whereas in the East it is primarily for the Negro only and not for the Mexican American, and part of our input was that it must also be a broader based concern. Now, I repeat, it's probably not as big a wave as you wish we'd achieve, but we are on it, and this has been the nature of our direction.
George.
I still just see how we like to beat around questions and not be. I'm so surprised that people don't want to even say what they. I can't see help but feel believed. Ed has specifically asked a question, and I have just been sitting here just hoping for an answer for his question, because if that question could be answered, I think we could get out of the minors and deal completely with the major, which is question one.
Like I'm in the major, I believe.
For years now, for quite some time, the dissident student has moved from the teacher because the attitude that has been given, or the responsibility given to the teacher by both the parents and the school system, is that the teacher is always right. When you get in a position to say that you're always right, then there's no need in me talking to you on a no condition, because you're right. There's no need in me trying to talk to you. Today in the school system, the student is at that point. There's no need to talk to my counselor, there's no need to talk to my principal, because I always end up on the wrong side. In the southern states, in the black schools, there was no problem that even relates to the problem that the northern and the western schools had. And I'm not talking about now, I'm talking about when I first came here in 1943, I went to a southern school. Because they flunked teachers in my school. Teachers were failed. They failed. They were kicked out of school, not students transferred from school to school like the school system you have now. The first thing, before you write any curriculum, before you get any attitudes about them teachers, you're going to have to stop doing some things that you're doing. Now, you mentioned here the school system about what it's doing now that it was not doing before. But you have not mentioned anything that you were doing before that you stopped doing now. You're still doing the same thing you were doing before that antagonized students, plus you're trying to put something else in to make what you were doing that was wrong sweet. It's bitter then and it's bitter now, no matter how much funds you use or how much money you add to it. It's still bitter, George. It's still bitter. That is the distance between the respect that the student has for the teacher. You don't have it now. Now, I want you to be honest, please, if you can, about one thing. Ain't no dialogue that the teachers change. It's been the rebellion of the students throughout the United States that made you put 9 or 10 teachers in Lincoln High School. Let's be honest about why you're doing something. You're doing it because there was a rebellion in the community and you didn't know what the hell was going to happen. That's why you're doing it. Now, Ed's question was, do you have to be kicked in the chin in another way to do something else? That's what he's asking. Now, that's specifically a question. Are you going to have to be kicked in the chin before you use the act that has already been passed in the legislature of assembly, giving each district the right to set up its own curriculum other than six subjects? Are you going to have to be kicked in the chin before you do that? Now, you say, somebody used the question here, complicated plan, a blueprint. You cannot write a blueprint. You don't have the architects to do it. Because the guys who are writing a blueprint and a complicated plan, you call, is the same ones who complicated the school system in the first place. This is where you are now. You've got the wrong people on the staff to write your complicated plan. Now, you don't respect this. You don't respect people without degrees. Fortunately, I do. I respect people without degrees. Because I've met too many educated fools in my time with masters and PhDs. These students are not relating to the masters and the PhDs. They are relating to the most negative element of society, and Ed knows that, and any school system knows that. Because the most kids now, all he wants is one thing, and that's a leather jacket and a BlackBerry cap. He's not a member of a Panther, but he wants to wear that identity. He wants that button on his shoulder. That's what you're dealing with. You're not dealing with a kid who comes to town with a part in his hair anymore and a short haircut. You're not dealing with this problem. And the same thing we've said through the dialogues on many issues. You just don't want to deal with the problem. And this is a responsibility of Mexican people, white people, black people to make you deal with the problem. But the only thing we can see in the way we get it done is what Ed said, and let's kick you in the shin. We got the protest at a board meeting. We got a threat to close down a school before even thinking about hiring some black people at an all-black school. Now, that's what had to happen to get you to do that at Lincoln High School. You wasn't planning on hiring no 10 black teachers last year at Lincoln. Don't tell me that. Now, the coming year, things are going to fall back in the same system. In April, you're going to make your reappointments again. You got three or four, I understand, what's called curriculum specialists in the city schools or something like that. Don't you have curriculum specialists, guys who are specialists in the curriculum field?
We have 8 or 10 such positions.
8 or 10 such positions. And there's not one black on that position.
We're Mexican-American.
I'm not sure there's an Mexican. But I do know that there's one man, and you say, well, where is he? We're trying to develop him. Bob Russell is one of the sharpest cats on black history in this city. Yeah. And he could be a curriculum specialist. But you deal around and about. You're trying to get people to write something for you who messed up the system in the first place. And that's why you're not being respected for what you are trying to do. I know you guys are trying to do something. I understand that. I mean, I really do. You really are making an effort. But you see, it doesn't matter in your position and from your frame of reference how much you do. You can't do enough because you don't know what to do. Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry for a long dissertation.
I kind of hate to follow George because I can't be as eloquent, but I do have a remark that follows Ed Butler's question, and I think it's relevant to yours, although I can't speak it as well, but I'll try. Seems to me that one of the characteristics of oppressed people is the fact that they get the attitude, and I suppose it's the truth, that they have no impact on their own environment. And so they have kind of a fatalistic attitude about themselves and about the environment they're in. And then when the opportunity comes, that is when you get some organizers for such a thing as a riot, people who felt that they've had no impact on their environment are very ripe, it seems to me, to fall into or to overreact in what we see as riots and violence. Therefore, if this analysis is true, it seems to me that one of the things that the schools ought to consider doing more of is helping all kids, but particularly kids that are in depressed areas, to have impact on their environment. And I think counselors, if they're given the function, can be helpful in having kids realize that they do have an impact on their environment. It would seem to me that this would imply that the student governments and the school newspapers would have to be more than just mild pablum that they tend to be, but the school newspapers ought to represent some of the controversy and some of the dialogue that actually exists in the school system. But the way it exists now, it seems to me that there's a trend to quell, to keep down all differences of opinion and all dissident kinds of activity. And all this does is perpetuate the feeling that kids don't have an impact on their own environment. They have nothing to say. I would recommend that the schools allow kids to feel more impact. And I think one way they can do that is through their counseling system, but not when the counselors are charged with all the other responsibilities that they have today.
Yeah, I think you were related then to some of the things that George was saying. Frank, you never did get in. I'm not sure you get in at this point. You still want to get in here or later?
No, I don't know. I may as well come in now. I think it really amazes me to sit here opposite two administrators from the district and have them say that they don't have enough resource material on Mexican American to provide a course on Mexican American contributions to whatever we're talking about, history or whatever we're talking about, positive image of the Mexican American. I think that what we're talking about here is a total commitment to quality education for the Mexican-American and the black community. And I think this is where the school district has failed. And I think, coupled with what George said, in terms of your sort of doing a patchwork job, rather than really making a total commitment to really affect change, I think this is what we're talking about. When you're talking about cultural differences, how these are looked upon by counselors in your schools, and how many counselors do you have that are sensitive? I read here, it says, there is a lack of trained minority and bilingual people in counseling positions. Well, fine, what are you doing about it? Now, this is what we're talking about. Now, if we're not really working to make a total commitment, then what are we really talking about? We're just wasting our time here, dialoguing. And that's exactly what we're doing. So what, if any, are you doing to really do something to meet the needs of the Mexican-American community, specifically in the area of counseling? Not giving people sensitivity training, not giving people Spanish so that they can cope better with the language. I think that what Tom was talking about, sensitivity towards our teachers, this is good. But I think that when we are working with attitudes that have been formed over a period of time by our administrators, then I think we have to start working here, because this is where the policy is made. If a teacher or a counselor is saying, yes, I realize that particular student is saying this, he's not going to move because that administrator is not going to let him move. And if we're working with those attitudes that have been formed over centuries, well, then we're going to really be lost.
Carol, last summer, Dr. Hall and I had some conversation on this. There was a young Mexican lad that just got his counseling certificate at State. It was the same day that we sat here and, you know, practically with tears in their eyes, they told us that there weren't any counselors available. Now, after I found out, that day I found out that the young man did not apply as a counselor at San Diego City Schools, because it seems that they don't take counseling. They take teachers and make them advisors. Now, this young man was 14 years old, and he lived out in the fields, and he has all the background, and he's worked hard to get himself through school. When he was 14, he lived in the fields. Anyway, whatever. So the thing is that I made an investigation on this, and he did get a job at San Clemente High, which has a few Mexicans, but not many. Now, I found out that it's legislative practice, you can hire a counselor directly to your school system, but it's local practice not to do it. Now, it seems to me here are individuals that are going to State College to get their counseling degree. They get out, and he had to have a B to get in there and a B to get out of there, accepted by State. I understand that there was an investigation that he was unsuitable. Well, yes, I understand, too, that some of the professors didn't agree with the new techniques he would have used with the new students. They were back to the professors there, to the old-fashioned, don't forget that teacher is God, business authority. And there was a disagreement there. But I wonder how many kids, how many young men and young women came out of San Diego State and did not apply. He did not apply because he when he went to find out about it, he heard they didn't take counselors direct. So are we talking about counselors, or are we talking rewards given to some teachers and that put up as advisors?
This is the one you wrote me about, George.
That's right.
Okay, Ed?
Well, just another question. To what extent does the student now participate in the preparation of the curriculum which is aimed at educating him for the kind of
Ed,
life...
Ed, would you excuse me? I'd like Mr. Hall to answer that.
Oh, I'm sorry, huh?
Which one of the several questions may I start answering? I prefer to answer Frank's and then Mrs. Chacon's, but if you want me to go to this other, I'll go here. I mean, one of my problems on the dialogue is I am here, I'm listening to, often it's stated as a question, but it's also a way of stating a concern.
Okay.
And frequently I have wanted to answer, but your dialogue has said it passes on to someone else.
Just react immediately. That's all you have to do.
Well, but again,
if someone asks you a question, you react to the question.
I think it is true that there have been a dozen questions put to me, and I've had a chance to answer about two.
Okay.
Now, I am ready to come to answer your question and Mrs. Chacon's in that order, if that's
fine.
The chairman's
fine. Let's try that. We understand you're following the rules.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
To try and talk to your point, Mr. Seitz. It is true that at the present time we have less minority staff than we as district administrators wish we had. Your question, what are we doing about it and how are we working to get the people to help in counseling that are qualified to help these individuals? First, one of the changes that's taking place this year on the recruitment of new teachers coming into the system. We will have, as part of the recruiting team on certain of the colleges where it can probably make the most difference, we will have one of our Mexican-American educators part of the recruiting team on certain colleges. We will have one of our Negro educators part of the recruiting team on certain other colleges for the purpose of increasing our recruitment of qualified minority people to come in and be teachers. This is one point. Now let me come back to the other. There has been a change of direction as I sense the input we are getting as it relates to how best to use the available minority people. Rightly or wrongly, two or three years ago, we sensed the input that there was criticism of our district that we were not using our available minority people in all of the school system, and that we, in a sense, this is the Lindsley report in effect said, we are prejudicial in our unwillingness to assign them to Point Loma, La Jolla, Claremont, Einstein, and what have you. As of, I think it's 2.5 years ago, in the initial presentation to the staff, the superintendent in his talk, which was both to staff and was also on open television, made an appeal to our minority staff to ask for assignments outside of the area where they lived. And for that year we worked on it and we increased the number who were assigned to the schools that were not their home district with the segregated school. Then a year or so back, I sensed a different input. And part of this was George Stevens, and I acknowledge that. George Stevens' input was saying, look, we need black teachers at Lincoln. We need Mexican-American teachers at Lincoln. And this then has been a change in which we're trying to stay sensitive to what we hear and sense as to the meeting of the needs. And as of this past year, there was deliberate recruitment of people who are minorities to come to the schools where the minorities are in highest concentration. My easiest and sharpest illustration is Gil Hoosman, who a year ago was a teacher, I believe it's Kearney, Jack?
Yes.
Where the percentage or number of Mexican-American students that he could give special help for was less than it is at Lincoln. He was recruited from a teaching assignment at Kearney to be a counselor, community and parent counselor at Lincoln, and the report given 2 weeks ago, he was reporting the extent to which he has, in his 3 or 4 months of duty there now, achieved close working relationship with the approximately 170 Mexican-American students at Lincoln to be a personal counselor, one who can also use his influence to talk to teachers so that they have a better understanding of this Mexican-American boy or girl that he's interested in. So that there has been a shift in which we said, instead of allowing him to continue to teach probably Spanish at Kearney, he comes to Lincoln to make a contribution in the counseling area to help young members of his group. So that this is a change we're working on. This is what has happened within the last 6 months.
I think it's just what I'm concerned about is the degree of change. I know we have to start somewhere, but I think we always get this specific example in one school or two schools. When we're talking about, again, total commitment, when we're talking about the alienation that the students feel, why do you think those 70 Mexican-American students walked out at Mar Vista? They had a legitimate gripe about the counseling that they were being given, about the way they were being directed. So again, I'm talking, well, it's fine, your efforts, as George says, you are trying to do something. But again, let's get people in there, into your administrative staff, who are sensitive to what these answers are to these problems.
We are working at it. I understand that you wish our rate of change was more rapid than it is. But I am saying there is a very positive commitment to move, and your judgment and mine may vary only as to what is reasonable rate of change. I am concerned that we're making a change in the social institution and it's already ongoing, and we can evolve change. If we were establishing a brand new school, we could have its performance be achieved faster. But working within an established institution, there are problems of the drag of social institutions. But we're trying our best to offset them and to work against them and to achieve the proper commitment.
Carol, this is a true thing, I'm sure that like you're saying. I think, you know, I Ed's question to me this morning just stayed so much within me. I see some things that perhaps you may see, but maybe you don't feel it as I do. I see the black student councils forming in almost every high school in San Diego right now. I see a junior high school that looked at me and some kids said, man, if you're gonna close down a school, won't you close down Gumpers? Because we're the one that's catching all the hell. Now this is a junior high school, and you know at the junior high level, you have young people who are more or less, you cannot control them as much as you can a high school student today. I think you will probably agree. But so, George, what I am concerned about is that the change that you're making is probably significant and probably relevant. But somehow, the response, the needs to curtail the attitudes that are existing now. See, they aren't existing a little bit at a time. They are there in full force right now. They are getting ready to blossom because they are blooming. It's right now. And when something happens at another school, like the one happened in L.A., it gives these cats ideas. You've got to, I'm sure you yeah, must know that.
We know
okay.
that.
Now, when it does it, what you just told Frank and what you told me in response to me, that doesn't mean a hell of a bean. If you understand me, now, say we can understand you at our level. We understand you're trying very hard. You see,
But there's going to be, has to be some cats out there from that Board of Education at that school who can relate to that dude who's getting ready to start that incident, or it doesn't matter how much you've
George,
been trying to do
that
it.
That goes
not
back to my question. Why didn't they hire the kids, the counselors coming out?
Okay, Jerry, let me put it real frank to you. Let me say this real frank here. Now, I'm not patting myself on the back for having an ability to do something. It's something I've worked like hell to obtain, and I'm proud of it. I don't believe that there's a campus in this city I can't stop a ride on. Now, I'm saying that to say this. You're going to have to start hiring some people in education who are going to have that same ability to do the same thing, or you, in your time that you're taking to indoctrinate this curriculum, it ain't going to get that in time. That's all I'm really saying. These things are going to have to be done now and not in time.
Estelle, you had a direct question too. Why don't they hire counselors?
What would counselors direct with the counselor's degree, counselors as such credential
as opposed to advisors taking a teacher move.
Right.
All right. Go ahead. Can you react to that? Then we'll get back to the other.
Because they do in the other part of the state. He was hired at San Clemente High as a counselor.
That's a short one, George.
Well, two parts. I am still convinced that our present design is better. Now, you believe I'm wrong, but I'm still convinced that our design is better.
You do not hire them to start.
We do not hire the grade level advisors, counselors initially. Scott Gray may hire someone as a psychologist or a district counselor.
But not the
grade level counselors without their being first secondary teachers in the district.
Why is that, George?
Yeah.
All right.
To relate both to students and teachers.
Doctor doesn't have to be a woman to be a woman doctor. I mean a man doctor.
All right.
Why is that, George?
Right. Again, it is judgment. And there will be many here who believe I'm wrong in my judgment. But it is my best judgment that the function of the grade level advisor or counselor, and we have both, does require the communication both with the student and with the teacher, and that this is the function we're talking about. Now, Mr. Gray here is responsible for some district counselors who are those dealing with the typical problem case studies and what have you.
Well, we leave those out for the time.
And so I'm saying for those we take a different position, but for those that are assigned the responsibility to provide guidance, counseling, advising primarily related to the school course operation, because that's what they're dealing with, that's their current problem, and they have from 150 to 400 that are their assigned counselees, members of the 10th grader, the 11th grader, the 12th grade. We believe that for these individuals, it is a bridging of the counseling function and the teaching function, and that they need to have the teaching experience and understanding rather than to be hired as counselors only. This is judgment, but this is what it is.
Does money have anything to do with it?
No.
Following that, I think that just in the frame of reference of counselors, perhaps when we are talking about counselors, we are talking from one frame of reference that says we are expecting counselors to really counsel, to be there and counsel. Basically, I don't think that in the San Diego school system we have that. And that is really what we're asking for.
Right.
Are people with an open door policy even.
Right.
To where there are people there that when these students come up with the button that wants to belong to identify with an element, he has someone to talk to. He can talk to and that individual can relate to him. And being a teacher does not necessarily give you the background to do that. I was a teacher. I remember talking to the San Diego City Schools when I was looking for my master's in counseling and asked the same question. about wanting to be assigned as a counselor. I was not interested in teaching the Kramer reference any longer, and instead they were not assigned directly. I recall asking the question, I would like to work in Southeast San Diego schools. I understand there is a void in the counselors there, understanding, relating, not that I felt I would be able to do an outstanding job, but felt I had the commitment and the interest to learn to do the best job I could do. And the answer was, no, you are not assigned directly to a counseling position and directly from a school you go through the teacher ranks. And I said, you mean there would be no way to become assigned to a Southeast San Diego school as a counselor if one wants to and you're prepared for a master's degree? And I felt the answer was no, and it would be impossible to do this. Now, I say that because I had a basic commitment as a white with a basic commitment, a basic desire to want to do that. I think you're maybe two steps ahead of the game. However, I found really when I started working, I was 10 steps behind. And it took probably a good year of good reaction, sensitizing, I really don't know what you want to call it, from people like George, who would come often and tell me I was a racist, a bigot, from others who would go through the whole thing with me. But basically, you get over that and you say, how am I willing to react and learn from this and become sensitive to it? I say that even with commitment and interest, it takes a lot more in-depth getting at it to really be able to see from that viewpoint and to feel from that. And so I was very concerned when I talked to a teacher from Lincoln last year in literature, asked her about how she stressed Negro contributions to her black students. And she said, I don't use Negro authors because I've read some of their work, and where would the children get their models of joy and happiness and human beauty if they were to study Negro authors? Their work is so depressing. And she went through this, of course, but that's the way it is. And then another teacher who said, I had never talked to a Negro until I was assigned to teach at Lincoln High School. And so, just from my frame of reference, I'm saying that as much as I felt, and as much as I had to learn, and still do, I readily admit that. And I also readily admit that the Mexican-American is just starting on me. And I expect that this is going to be another beautiful process if we can all stick to it. But it takes work on both sides. I'm saying that how can these teachers provide the stimulation and motivation for these students unless we really, devotedly get to them and give them these opportunities and experience to really get at it. And so teachers, just being teachers and staying in that position, don't mean anything when it comes to counselors. I'm saying that in the counseling framework, I think of something like POWA, and I have to use that because I think it's a beautiful counseling system where students can come in and simply be counseled, relate their problems, pick their counselor, pick who they want, open door policy. They may find one counselor to talk over social problems with, another to talk over academic problems with. But it's there and it's open, and you feel a working relationship between students, teachers, and counselors, and you're not all hung up with trying to be everything to everyone.
Is the structure so inflexible that under this dire emergency of a need for the identity of children who have lived in this mixed dichotomy, that there isn't any way open to let in counselors that aren't from the old way, your old way of doing things?
Mr. Cazone, let me give you two answers, because you're really asking a question that has two elements. One, it would be difficult in our system to take in our Mrs. Lang over here strictly as a counselor, but I believe that it could be possible that we could do that. But you're also asking about an individual person, and it is still our responsibility to select persons that we believe to be qualified. And my investigation of this particular one was, and I went to the right sources, at least as far as I know it, his professors, who said he is not the one ready to do the particular kind of function that you would be talking about. So, in your particular case, I have to say it was a negative for two reasons. One, it would have been a marked departure from plan, but that could have been broken. But the individual was not, in our best judgment, the candidate to do it.
Was he the only Mexican American graduate that got this counseling certificate, or
this I don't
recruit?
Know. This
or
I don't know.
Go to state and recruit. Wait for them to come out.
Well, I'm saying this other is possible, but I am going to want to have it be those that the evidence are it's the right person, and this is the second part of your particular concern.
Carry several hands up, see if we can get this going. One, two, three, and then back to Paul, and then Jordan, be five. Okay, one, two, three, four, and then five. Okay, you got it.
I'm Rosemary Garcia, and I'm new to this type of situation. In fact, I come from a county where we haven't had this type of a setting. Now, I have, if I'm asking questions that have been answered in the past or have been tried to be answered, I hope you'll bear with me. But first of all, I would like to ask how many educators, college educators there are here, teacher trainers is what I mean. I'd like to know how many teacher trainers. Now, I thought your function was as a school counselor.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about teacher
right.
trainers.
No,
teachers
I'm with the district. I'm with
college
the
level trained
oh.
teachers.
All right, then.
Okay. Now, the reason I'm asking this is because the word trained and qualified has come up a couple of times in this discussion. And I'm concerned about those that are training and qualifying people for our emergency now. I don't think the people that are training and qualifying people for emergencies are ready to train and qualify people for emergencies. I don't think they're doing an adequate job. I don't think they know how. The reason I say this is because I have sat in on supposedly the trainer's session and they're ignorant. Now, I'm not talking about this area. I'm talking about UC Santa Barbara, and you know, this is an area that I think is more or less representative of what happens in our college system. They don't know, so they're asking some of us. But they can't really ask us with a lot of commitment because they're afraid to say, well, this is an area that I'm a doctor in, but I don't know about, and I have to go to a citizen to ask them something, you know, which is to find out. Now, this is the first, and I think we're putting the cart before the horse if we're talking in terms of trained and qualified people, and we're using the criteria that the colleges have now for the people that are trained and qualified. Their criteria is not adequate. Dr. Hall, I think I'm talking to Dr. Hall. Is that okay? I think you're wrong in your judgment. Your best judgment is wrong. You too were trained in the type of system that we've known in the past. Is it possible that you could be retrained? I mean, do you think you could disorganize and reorganize your thinking?
That's what you're
doing,
Ben.
That's where it's at.
That's
where it really is.
And we've got problems, and we're going to continue to have problems. Now, in the meantime, what kind of a constructive program can we offer? We're telling you, hire people. Now, there are black people or brown people. There isn't one man for all things. Now, Mr. Woodman, if he was a Spanish teacher, I don't know him. So, if he was a Spanish teacher, I question whether he's able to deal with social problems of the Mexican or the brown person, of the young brown person at this time. I'm afraid I've been through that bag, too. And Now, a black person, if he's trained in our system, I question really whether he has learned in that system what he needs to know in order to handle the student of today. So, this means, Dr. Hall, that you have to readjust your thinking and hire people that are not trained and qualified according to your standards or those set up by the systems now.
I agree with what Mrs. Garcia is saying, that there is also the problem of the training of the new or the retraining of the old teachers to service. Your point is valid and good, and this is the whole thing is a continuing spiral to try and bring about improvement, and it's awfully easy to blame it on someone else, but this is part of the problem. In terms of our willingness to change, I think I have a willingness to change my thinking. I think I have done some, but you always have difficulty in evaluating yourself. We have done some breaking through this problem of being limited by credentials and other things. We're working on it. Now, I think there was reference made 2 weeks ago to our extended or supplementary program at the Lincoln Center. Al Colum, the man in charge, as yet does not have the full credentials to be a principal. But we found the way of establishing a program, and this is financed with local money, of setting it up under the Civic Center and recreational authorization to schools to operate a program in which the rules of credentialing of teachers do not apply. Just yesterday, I was on the phone with him trying to pick up an idea that I got at the Urban League Board of Directors meeting, in which one of the non-college trained members of the Board of Directors was saying that there is need for help to the young people and the older people in the Lincoln area in how to properly invest in San Diego and how to understand how you can benefit from retirement systems and all the rest. We ought to have instruction in that. The Urban League and its plan was on another very important area, and it looked as though they weren't about to pick that up. So I call Al Coleman and say, get together with this individual. You do know at least who he is. Talk to him and talk about how this Lincoln Supplementary Center can put together this proposal and make it work. Now, I'm saying, if it is made to work, the people who will be doing the instruction on the total area of economics and investment and retirement and all the rest will not be teachers. They will be people in the community. They may be maybe someone who we're working with, as I think you would know about, a group of barbers wanting to put together a credit union for themselves. One of them may be part of how to pass on this know-how to somebody else. So, to come back, we're trying to break away from some of these traditional designs, including state credentials, to get at the service designed to meet your need. But again, we're trying to change.
I have to react again.
Okay.
You're trying to change, Dr. Hall. The other evening, I was at another meeting in which you were involved regarding counseling, too. You heard a Dr. Hathaway asking to pick the brains of the community people that were there. But Dr. Hathaway did not have the power to include the person that whose brains he was picking in his structure. Yes. Now, where do you think we would have time? Or how do you think we would finance ourselves? Let's say you called me and said, come and talk to me, we can maybe put something together. Now, why why would you think that I should have the time or have the finances to come and talk to you to put something together if you don't care to include me in your structure as a formal person there so that that would be my job? I really question your calling. Call this guy and ask him for a program so that we can end up with something worthwhile. You're picking somebody's brains and you're not even giving him credit for having done it. Now, if you're going to be effective, you're going to have to include these people in your structure as such. Not just as somebody that you talk to about a program. I would refuse to talk to you if I weren't so cause-oriented. I'm concerned about the kids, and I'm concerned about our total society. I'll talk to you on that basis, but I won't, I'll talk for only so long, and then if I see that you're continuing to carry on this pattern, then I'm going to quit.
But if I heard one of the points you're making, that maybe you can't afford to contribute your opinion on this, I'm saying we have the possibility and we are using it to employ you if necessary, to be part of the planning group to put together the one you're talking about or any other. And we have
all
done
right,
so.
All right, I'm available. Without any credentials, without a previous criteria based on your limited knowledge.
May I say something?
Yeah.
The person that came up with the idea on this credit union in Southeast San Diego, the black person that came up with this, is teaching the class for us. That's Lincoln Adult.
But is he being paid for being creative about the
Yes, well, he's being paid.
Well,
right.
Is he just paid as a teacher?
He's being paid as a teacher, and he's establishing a class that's growing.
Well, I don't want to get too far away from it. Jerry, you want to ask a point on that question? That a question on that point?
Right.
We got four other people I named somewhere.
What Mrs. Garcia is addressing herself to is institutional change. I think what Dr. Hall has addressed himself to is the extra institutional establishment of the Lincoln Extended Day Center, which seems to me is going to become a catch-all and a reprieve from actually including structural changes within the academic program and the processes that take care of our 8-to-5 or 8-to-3:30 kind of school day. And George, you know quite readily that within the state of California, there is provision now to use people within the regular day class who do not meet the credential qualifications of the state of California. This is going on in Los Angeles. It's going on in Northern California. There are no excuses being offered. People are involved in the actual instructional programs relating to black and brown kids who, if they walked off the street, couldn't get a job in San Diego City Schools sweeping the floor. Now, one of the things that's important, I think, is that you and Jack say, stop saying we're working on it. We know that. That's a fait accompli. You're working on it. But if you had a riot tomorrow, all of a sudden, the whole structure would become excitingly creative, would become excitingly initiative-oriented, would all of a sudden find a way to upend the structure. And I, for one, as you know, want to see the structures change, not just in the secondary and elementary system, but in the higher educational system, too. And speaking to that point, then, Jack, in the counseling arrangements in your school, you could really fight for a plan that would put counselors directly in the schools, people necessarily who may not have had the PPS credential. You know, we're over-professionalized to the point where we simply don't understand how people relate to people at level one, the human level. And if I hear the people here talking correctly, this is what they're saying. Where do you get the level one types of individuals who can, through ESP or whatever experiences or whatever, relate directly to the kid and his problem? And I must say that when you're talking about your counseling structure, it appears to me that you want an infusion of ideas that you can then toy with in your own way and make them come out to fit the structure that already exists. what I hear them saying here today is that we want to take people in who can infuse in the system new approaches that are not predicated on the way San Diego City Schools does business.
Going back to that, had a call late last night that I personally, a call that they could have called any counselor from San Diego, but they called me, and I stopped something quite dangerous last night.
Well, let me go
and
on.
I'm not one of these, and I think we're getting calls like that, individuals
right.
are.
But we're speaking here to a philosophy. For example, how many Maya and BSC student organizations are actually going to be established in your schools? How many of these kinds of organizations are you going to authorize so that the students can begin as a body to address themselves to structural changes that they want to see? Is this taking place in the ESEA school? Are you having parent, student, and teacher confrontations in the school? Now, Fremont and LA had to close down before they had the good sense to put teachers and students in a room together, lock the door, and say, okay, baby, let's talk. Are we going to wait until we actually have to close down school to get to that point? We're lucky in San Diego. We've been just smart enough to move inch by inch in a direction that we can see you moving in to keep the lid just a little bit on. And I think what we're saying to you is that some very drastic and dynamic and creative changes have to almost be done instantaneously. Something big, something really different, so that the community can begin to believe, so that the credibility gap, which is still very large, can be somewhat closed. What are you going to do about it? What about the Maya and BSC groups? What about this infusion of new counseling techniques that don't meet your standards? What's going to happen? When will that happen? What about your taking the initiative to go to the State Department of Education and push for grants for textbook writers? I mean, you know, you say that's the State Department responsibility, but they're not going to move unless somebody begins. It's initiative oriented in the direction of social change. And believe me, throughout the whole system, and I feel, State of California, I feel I have a feel for what's going on, really. Black people and brown people are getting their thing together because they want to see large structural changes. And when this black and brown power block really fuses in California, it's going to hit the fan.
Can I want to relate to that one part about the counseling?
All right, then the...
Yeah, on to a specific point here. According to the instructions, according to the job description I have here that was passed out at the last meeting, it's already built in for people who don't have to have credentials. In fact, I've already ran into two ex-police officers who are counselors in school in Southeast San Diego. You had one at Lincoln by the name of Nettles. You got one, Nat Fulton, who's in my boys' school out there, and he's an ex-policeman, what I've been told. And the credentials, I understood that he had no credentials at the time. He had never went to Lincoln, that he had no credentials. And reading your description here, I don't see a requirement for a credential either here. For the, it's called a disciplined counseling. It's disciplined slice counseling here. It says the role of the counselor and what have you. Now, maybe all the description isn't here, but I guess my question would be, what is the credential requirement for a disciplining counsel? So I think we have
okay,
one, probably, which...
If he wishes to react, let's hold for a minute then.
First, this comes back to, there is one issue in which some are saying we should only have full-time credentialed counselors fully trained. There is another point being made that I'm now talking to, and it is going to partly disturb somebody else. We do have the advisor. We have teachers who have a discipline role, who have teaching credentials and who do not have pupil personnel credentials. This is true. This is what, as George knows, is true, that of the 10 there, at least 3 or 4 are not necessarily the fully, quote, credentialed counselors. So yes, George, you're
so
right.
There is,
we are doing it now.
As Estelle said,
we do have latitude, and we're arguing.
Carol, I have to leave. Can I relate 6 things which I'd like to leave with the school system here?
No,
there's 6 for change in the school system.
Well, she had a question also out that I thought she wanted answered. If you list them, then George, you said relate six, but if you miss six, you know.
I just want to list six.
Okay, but first, Jerry, you wanted a question answered.
What arrangements for student participation in your schools is going on, you know, in real important decisions, and what about these student groups? Are they going to be established on your campuses?
Jerry, as you know, for some time we've been working with you and with the with Kern Carson and the folks at the University of California to set up an arrangement to make it possible for black students and brown students from UC.
I didn't mean that. I mean the high school students having their own groups on your campus.
Will the groups be open to all students? Are they
Yes.
The groups will be open to all students.
Right.
You know,
Yes,
if you want to know about Lincoln High School.
Oh, what are you doing?
We have a group over there, Harambee.
BSC is
Harambee. Now we open to all students.
Right.
And we have Puspa Seattle, which is also started, which is open to all students, but is set up in terms of the Mexican American.
Well, I think specifically, though, you don't have what's called a black student union. You cannot identify yourself and only be black. You've got to be open to whites, too, if they want to join. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, not only that, you have, I'm asking this because I don't know a whole lot about rules either. I think that if you have a college fraternity organization, the high school cannot have that same organization. So it has to have a different name.
Yeah, it's just, but it's in the same form. It can be in the same. Okay.
But I think we're going to miss the reality, though, that Ed mentioned and Jerry touched upon, George and others. It may not be within our present range of permissiveness, of permission, to allow, say, a black student high school group.
Well, why do they got to have that same name?
Wait a minute now. Or a brown student. We might not like it individually, but our individual concerns that I'm leading right become irrelevant.
They are.
In the United States, in the state of California, at Fremont and the other schools, that is one of the realities that we're going to have to face. Now, my personal inclination might not be to grant it, but if we're talking realities here, the question becomes, how are we in San Diego still going to deal with the demand and the disturbances, et cetera? Now, wait a minute. Get away from the idea it ought to be or not be. I'm taking what they have said and tried to rephrase it. A core reality is that these groups are going to demand to be established. Now, whether they should be or should not be, completely irrelevant, and Carol Wayman's personal opinions have nothing to do with it. They are not going to go according to mine or anybody else's. That's the core reality in the state of California. Now, that's another way of saying some of the things been said.
Could I respond by saying, first, there was a question and there was a statement. Mrs. Ritchie has given the answer to the question. We have perceived what you, Jerry, and you are making as statements, but it is not seeming for us to try and answer what was in fact a statement.
Yeah, I just tried to clarify the other part of what was being said. Now we have some other hands up. George,
I'm going to have to leave. Oh, it's okay, Carol. Go ahead.
Let's get him and then come back to you, George.
My name is Bob Durian. I'm a counselor educator at San Diego State. I may have trouble articulating what I'm thinking because I'm so damn mad. Number one, first, let me respond to you. I just moved to San Diego, so I don't know too much about it.
I did too.
First year teaching out there, I taught 3 years, prior 3 years at another university in another state. Prior to that, I spent 17 years in public schools. 11 of those years were spent as a high school principal in an area about the size of San Diego. And where am I trying to go with this? Well, why am I angry? Number one, hell, I spent those 11 years at meetings just like this. We talked about changing courses. So, hell, we'd add courses, you know. We'd add courses. And nothing changed, though. Nothing happened. Why not? We never looked at our basic attitudes that were reflected in our values, that are reflected in some behavior that hell we ought to get at, some behavior toward people. In this particular district, it was largely a WASP area, but we had our niggers there, about 25% of our students. Some of them were black, some of them were white, some of them were brown. They were our niggers. These were the kids we faced.
How'd you say that word?
Niggers.
Huh?
These were our niggers.
Because that's what they were calling.
Oh, I see. This, yeah,
that was
it
all over.
I'm trying to say the way it is for me. We had these kids that, you know, we flunked out. There's 25% that didn't make it in our school system. And so we'd add courses. No, we'd add a new course. know, and nothing happened. Nothing changed. We still had the same number of dropouts. We still had the same amount of anxiety and frustration, tension from our students. So we looked at grades even. We finally came up with a very extensive system of grading. What I would recommend to you people, if you really want to find out what's going on and what's happening to the kids, you can do it. It's not too difficult if you have access to computers. Go into your school, just a simple little thing. Go into your schools and get your average GPA, your average grade point average, by the course, by departments, by teachers, if you want to really measure attitudes, because grading reflects attitudes. Find out what your grade distribution is. Find out what they are by the departments, by the courses, by teachers. And you're going to really, really find out where it is then.
Regarding change.
I don't know. I'm certain that George has a lot of good things to say, but he loses me in his words. I'm certain he do have some good things to say, but it takes you 10 minutes to say something that I think you can say in a sentence. It would probably be very good. And as to your point, those 11 years I spent hiring people. I've been in counselor education now for 4 years. I can count on one hand the blacks and the browns who weren't more washed than I am. You know, hell, I'd like to see somebody come in. Yeah, this is right. I'd like to see some come in who are really excited, who are really involved. And it's your point. You know, I spent those 11 years, I spent 75% of my time defending either teachers or counselors or myself because we were trying to innovate. 1% of the population controlled the decisions of the board oftentimes. I could take a drop off if I could have enough time where I wasn't defending myself or somebody. I could place that kid with teachers so he wouldn't fail. 1 year we took 17. We didn't tell the board or the central office. We took 17 of the toughest kids we had in school. They were really hostile and destructive. And we got a hold of 6 teachers. We set up a special program. We called the course names for the same damn thing. We got every one of those kids through school except one, and he shouldn't have been in there anyway because he was dropping out of school, but he was somatically affected. He had ulcers. He really wasn't acting out like the other kids were. So the 2 points I'm making, we're not getting the blacks and the browns who are active and involved. And secondly, when we try to innovate, when we try to talk to kids the way it is, when we try to say to a kid, what are the things that are really bugging you? Hell, we're dead. All we need is one parent to go to a school board and say, hell, the counselor's talking to this kid about sex. He's talking to this kid about hate for teachers, hate for parents. Hell, I know an illustration that happened here 3 weeks ago. A teacher was running groups of kids. The administrator came in. The kids were ventilating hostility toward their teachers. The administrator says, hell, you can't do that. That's the end of that. We can't talk to kids the way it is. How many of you people go to board meetings where pressure groups are putting pressure on teachers or counselors or administrators who are trying to innovate, who are trying to deal with relevant subjects? Do you ever go? Do you ever stand up and be counted? I haven't seen it any of where I came from before, but hopefully you do. I could go on and on.
I would glad you're mad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
go on.
Well, don't you realize that one of the things, like you say, that the Mexican that comes out of college is more washed than you are? You know, they've been after me to go back. To go to college.
Well, why don't you come in? I'd like to have you in the class.
What? And be brainwashed to come out of what?
Hell, I'm gonna brainwash you.
No, but this is just what you're saying. Am I going to run into you? I'm not going to run into you. I'm going to run into Mr. Hall.
Come in the court. Let me tell you, I finally got out of high school working when I hit 40. Before I was 40, I could always tell, hell, I'm going to try to do the best I can because I can always, if I get canned, I go somewhere else, get a job. When I hit 40, I said, hell, I'm starting to run a little scared. I think I'll get out of here and get to the university or college level where, hell, I can say it the way it is. I've had 3 students tell me in my class since I've been here that, hell, man, if you talk that way, you're going to get fired here.
Really?
It's
always
welfare.
Yeah.
Well,
okay, I've said enough.
I'd just like to relate these to see whether or not that they can possibly be some consideration for implementation, and I'll leave a copy of this here. One of the items, Cal, is this is something to stop doing, nothing new. Just stop transferring students now from school to school so readily as you have been before, such as kids I know have been transferred to every junior high you can name as a disciplinary name. Now, secondly is the sensitivity training for the teachers. When you stop transferring that child, you're going to have somebody to relate to him. He's not going to be any good if you don't just transfer him and keep him. I mean, stop transferring and keep him there. Somebody's got to relate to that child while he's there. Now, the third is a relative curriculum to the student's need, and the legislature assembly have already given you that means by which you can set that up right now. You could set up something in Lincoln. You don't have to have nothing like it in the rest of San Diego, and that, and you're legally correct to do it. So just a relative situation at Lincoln. If those cats want to swing in the morning for the first class and get themselves in order for the day, turn on a boogaloo in the morning to get them to study. I don't care how you do it. That's relevant. You see. I said this here before, that I went to college, I learned that I wanted to be an elementary teacher in San Diego, and I had to do the square dance. I had to do the 1-2-3, 1-2-3. That, you don't dig that stuff. Don't get that at Lincoln, no 1-2-3. Turn on the swing box in the morning for the first class. Give them something to warm up for the day by. Okay. The fourth thing is the curriculum specialist. Get a person in the curriculum who can write the curriculum as it's needed, not someone who's been there writing it all the time, who doesn't know when you ask, if you tell him something to do, he doesn't know what to do. You didn't hire for that kind of specialist. Hire a specialist to kind of write the curriculum. And I'm recommending specifically a guy like Bob Russell. Bob is good. You know his capability. The fifth thing is counselors. Counselors, they must be a defender for the student and not an oppressor of the student.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
The kid doesn't have a friend in school.
Yeah. Especially if he acts out a little.
That's right. Now, I work for Philco Ford. I'm the recruiter. I am the friend of the cat I'm recruiting and not Philco Ford. I defend that cat. If they say he ain't ready for our program, I can take my case in there and say he is. Even though they pay me, that's what they're going to have to do, I'm quitting. I'm defending that cat who's an epileptic. I'm defending the cat with one arm and the cat with one eye to get in that training program. Okay, a counselor has got to defend this kid with the teacher and with the principal. He's got to have a buddy in that school. At the elementary level.
Same point,
counselor, right. At the elementary level. You're catching these cats too late. He's ready to whoop you by the time he gets in junior high school and going to high school. Now you got part-time counselors. A teacher told me, she says, I have to kick every kid out of school twice because they ain't got time to deal with these individual problems in elementary school. Well, you start kicking them out now, you're going to be kicking them out all the way through school. And I said, you ain't kicking mine out, and he stayed at school. Now, I want to put that on record. Mine ain't going. Not for no fighting. Because I tell him, if a cat hit him, he better hit him back. Now, that's your rule, but not his. He's not going to get beat up while a teacher that you don't have enough counselors on the playground to watch him. In the junior high and the high level. Now, at least a full-time counselor, at least at one elementary school, at least one. The school I talk to when my kid goes, you don't have a counselor, said this. Now, the last thing, and this is where it gets down to this kid getting some vital things himself and some direction, is an advisor to direct the student in which path to go, and I don't mean to the woodshop. And this is an advisor. To do some testing to determine. I talked to a college kid yesterday and he doesn't know what he should be doing, and he's in junior college already, graduated from high school. And he couldn't even make change at a grocery store. I got him a job.
And he doesn't know how to make choices.
He doesn't know what. I said, son, what do you want to do? I don't know. He's in college. I said, what are you doing in college? Well, I'm taking business administration. You want to be a business major? No, I really want to be a guy using my hands. He doesn't know. Okay, advisors are going to have to do this type of thing to advise the students in the lower grades where they're going to go in junior high school, because if they don't give them some advice in junior high school, why should he even want to go to high school? Thank you very much.
George, the letter came in. Could you pass that over to George? George?
Can I ask a short question? Dr. Hall, would you use Chaka on your recruiting team or someone acceptable to him, someone he felt he could relate to? Yeah, I'm somewhat concerned that the comment I heard a minute ago, you may be propagating the same sort of selection as in the past, even though you put a black or brown member on the recruiting team.
At the moment, no. I may change my mind, but at the moment, I'm answering you fast, no.
Thank you.
Sure.
Buyout in San Diego State is interested in working in the community in various ways and getting some class credit for it. I'm wondering if people from Maya and BSC couldn't be used, you know, this idea of employing people outside the system or people that don't have the credentials who could relate directly to the students and then have them report to someone else if they need to get involved as far as the administration or a teacher is concerned. But they would be there available for the direct, immediate, personal counseling and guidance, but my experience with both Maya and BSC out of state college is that they've got some really fine, responsible people that I think can do an outstanding job in this, in exactly this particular area.
My answer is yes, and we are trying to employ black and brown college students for work in our school.
We are not only trying, we're doing it. For the 3 years running, we have made extensive employment of teacher assistants, and each time that the schools request the positions be filled, they have specified that they would prefer minority students.
Now we have
a specific program developing with, or underway with the University of California, where Kern Carson is going to deal directly with some of the Southeast schools in developing or making use of minority students.
As counselors.
Yes.
As motivational advisors.
No, but motivational.
But if we're talking about people having been miscounseled, and these, a lot of these young people are just out of a high school themselves, and are they in the position to counsel in that category if they've been under miscounsel?
I think maybe.
I'm not asking this.
I think maybe one of the things that hasn't been said that needs to be said. First of all, we're very much concerned about some of the same things that you're voicing. Not all of the people who work with youngsters at Lincoln or any other of the compensatory education schools or ESEA schools are the credentialed teachers or counselors. Conversely, at Lincoln we have teacher assistants who are employed, they're the college students that are employed. We have community people such as some of you have been employed as consultants and assistants in a variety of ways in the schools. We have high school students as tutors that are employed. We have at Lincoln a total of 70 adult tutors who are, most of them, volunteering their services and are working with as many as 200 students at Lincoln. The point I'm making is that the minority people who are working with Lincoln students or other schools too are not limited to the people who are regularly on the staff.
Well, I think most would agree. However, we were trying to keep zeroed in on number one and three here specifically today. That is, first is what is Lincoln Counseling and Guidance Program now, and three, what are the specialized counseling services? Granted, and maybe there at other times we could go into some of these other kinds of things that are supportive services, but I think they were expressing strong feelings specifically about counseling.
I come back to Mrs. Chacon's point. We believe that some of these 18 to 22-year-old individuals just out of high school, in fact, are probably the best ones to do motivational counseling for others of their same group, now in high school, to aspire to go on. So this is motivational advising, if I can describe it that way. And we think they may be the best. They're closest in age. They have made the transition out of high school into a higher institution. They may be the best for that purpose. You're asking the second part of the question, however. For the individual who now is motivated to go on, he now needs someone with more expertise to help this individual make his individual choices for his career plan. And now we're talking about probably a professional credentialed counselor.
Because I see in the world opening up, I see things like there's a new book called Careers, Psychology Today puts it out, that there's careers that, kids just out of high school that we're not even equipped to those, that are opening up to kids that don't even know about it. And I wonder how are these careers, I'm not even sure that counselors, full-fledged counselors know about these careers. How are they updating that?
But again, among the 10 we described 2 weeks ago, we have people who are the full-time specialist in this area and this area only.
Rosemary, your hand was up again, then Paul. Your hand was up.
Since George isn't here, I would not presume to ask him for one other consideration on his list, but I would think that equally important is that realizing the feeling of more minority counselors and more counselors per student, that it would be incumbent upon those who work with personnel to survey their minority teachers they now have and make sure that they are utilized to their maximum ability. And otherwise, I think, as I understand it, there are some almost 20 Black teachers who have full counseling credentials, and I know many of them are in programs teaching.
We'd like to review the facts with you, Rosemary, and we think you have the facts wrong. We'd like to go over the details.
Well, let's say if there are any that have full counseling credentials that are in just maybe lower level academic.
But then I have to disagree with you on a different point. We must be selective not only of whether or not they've taken the courses, but if their personality is the one, and there will be some who may have taken the courses that our judgment is are not the ones to do the remaining. So there will be selection.
All right. Yes, well, I give you that point that there should be some qualitative type.
Right.
Criteria. But I'm wondering if the same qualitative type criteria, George, is used for those white counselors as they relate to the Black students and the brown students.
We think we try, but again, we may not succeed as well as we should, but we attempt to use the same criteria regardless of skin color.
Well, yes, but I'm saying that once we're going to have to use criteria and include skin color. I think that
we
until
do.
We get to a point
we do.
The students, the feeling of the students, I think I've talked to hundreds of students, are that they really do not relate to their counselors, that their counselors don't understand them, they can't talk to them, and these are the students from Lincoln, who, if you just get their reaction, if they have a bad counselor, they would rather have a bad Black one.
I perceive what you're saying.
So I say maximize that Black and brown personnel you have.
And on part of your question, I agree 100%, and we did just exactly that this past summer, and it resulted in canvassing district-wide, and we moved a total of 9 people into Southeast schools, minority people, in counseling roles.
I'd like to follow up on this lady's question and on George's points and ask Jack and or George Hall how firm their attitude is on 2 other points where I disagree with what I think is the present policy, and that I think rule against the kind of counseling that the people are asking for. One is how firm your policy is on this rotation of teachers and counselors, because I feel that when you have
rotation system, you don't have a commitment to the counseling function. And the second point that I may disagree with you on is having the counselors deal with the discipline routinely and as a matter of their administrative function, because what you need in the schools is a person to whom kids can come to and to talk about some of the choices that they may have. And if they feel that a counselor is representing the school and representing the disciplinary function, they have no adult to turn to when it comes to such questions as, well, should I go with this gang or not, or there's a lot of dope going on here and I'm not sure. You know, if they can't raise these issues confidentially with a person, who is, they have no other place to go. So I see these two issues as ruling against the kind of counseling that's been asked for here on the part of the staff.
Attempt to make a real quick answer to the two. We do not have a firm policy that there must be rotation. We do not have a firm policy that there will not be rotation. This is still one of our unresolved as to a sharp answer, and we're doing some of both. On your second question, we do believe that for the grade level advisor or counselor who is responsible for a given number, 150, 200, whatever it is, students, that the first referral, even if it may end up with a disciplinary action, is a part of that function. So this, we are committed to that. But we do endeavor, and especially at the ESEA schools, we are succeeding in having additional people who do not have any aspect of the first level disciplinary referrals, who are available for the personal relating and who are qualified people to help them in the other aspects of counseling. But it may be someone other than the student's grade level advisor. Now, in 2 weeks ago, you'll remember Mr. Guzman talking very specifically to that he was a person to whom students were coming on their general problems, and he was representing them, to use George Stevens' point, with the other people. But this was a second person other than the grade level advisor.
Grant?
I'll try and make this a very specific type question. Is every student at Lincoln assigned to counseling?
Yes.
And approximately, what is the caseload of each counselor?
Jack can help on this. And remember, we have to be careful now, because there are multiple people who between them carry the total caseload. If you're only talking about those who are the grade level advisor and what is their caseload, I don't know, but maybe Mrs. Ritchie does. We do know that we have some, how many periods? We have a total of 78 periods per day available for the combined counseling services, all the way from the career development counselor who comes from the central office to make certain visits, the career, the district counselor, and the rest. We have some 78 periods available for 1,100 students. This is a very high level of load, if you will, very favorable to the students. It's at least twice as good as we would find at La Jolla or Mission Bay, to use two other schools of the same size.
It seems to me that the answer is being made unnecessarily complex. If there's a counselor, he has a certain number of kids assigned to him, does he not?
All right, you're talking about one of the people, and Mrs.
Okay.
Richie, can you tell
so
me?
Indeed, less than 150.
Be less than 150.
For grade level counselors only.
Right, part time.
They teach two, one class. So I wouldn't say part time in that it's just 2 hours. It's more than two. It's 3 to 4.
Would it be approximately 200 for the full time equivalent?
So we're saying that, for instance, if a person has 150 counselees, how many hours per day would he have to work with these counselors?
Six.
Well,
or somewhere between that.
Yeah, between that. Some is four, some is three.
Is your...
this is for educational advice.
Yeah, this is a grade level counselor.
Grade level educational advice.
In other words, a program arranger.
Right.
Now, do they have counseling other than program arranger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Then, what is the ratio of the caseload there?
Well, there are a total of 24 different individuals to counsel. And if you're talking about career counseling, there's one full-time person and a second person who is there for 3 or 4 days of the week.
For the full population?
For the full population.
About 1,100.
Yes. If you're talking about scholarship advisor, there's one full-time person, and his work, of course, is to make information available to students as far as scholarships and wherewithal to get into college.
In other words, the primary thing that takes place then really is advising, and there is a person who has a caseload of 150 with about 6 hours a day to work for this group.
No, because I didn't finish. If you're talking about people who are working specifically with the ones we're discussing here, then there are two people who are full-time available.
I don't follow that last point with
Mr. Guzman and Mrs. Anderson.
They are counselors in the school with
full-time.
The kids only.
Glenda,
yes.
You're trying to get at something like counseling. Why don't we give the total number of hours that we provide at Lincoln for counseling?
78 hours a day.
Because only when you put all of this in a pot and say how much time is actually spent on these 1,100 kids in some kind of counseling. Is that what you're trying to get at?
One of the things that I'm trying to get at is we have started.
You want to exclude the advisor?
Yeah.
Let me try to tell you what I'm trying to tell you. And so you tell me what I'm trying to tell you.
Man, I ain't trying to tell you. I'm listening.
Okay. We've heard a lot of discussion here today about the attitudes of counselors. And I have participated some in teacher training for counseling myself. It was really kind of a farce. In response to Mrs. Garcia's question about what goes into the training of counselors, I was called out about a year ago to a University of California Extension course entitled Counseling for the Disadvantaged. It's being held in an all-white part of town with all-white people there who were currently teachers who were supposed to be learning to counsel the disadvantaged. And since I was supposed to be an expert on welfare, they called me out to tell them something about poor people. It was a very rigid, very unflexible, very stereotyped group who had all the stereotyped ideas of what disadvantaged people are and what welfare recipients are and so forth. So it's kind of a bad thing. But at the same time, I'm certain that there are some people who have a degree of commitment and who would like to understand, but my primary concern is that their caseload is such that they do not really have time to deal with individuals on an individual basis. Now, whether this is founded or not, I do not know. I was called over to Lincoln High School this last summer to talk with the counselors there. No black and no brown in this group. I was told that there was one lady there who was black that was also a counselor who was not in the group that I was meeting with. We were talking, the point came up about do the kids get counseling or do they have programs arranged and see their counselor for disciplinary problems? And one of the men there says, well, that is not too far from the truth. However, we have a caseload of, seems as though he said, 350 or some such figure as this, and we teach several hours a day in addition to that. So, now maybe this was a summer school program, which is very different from the regular school year program. But nevertheless, and that might be worth questioning too, because if it is a summer school program,
probably a number of the people who were in summer school were the ones who had difficulty during the regular year and perhaps should be getting more attention rather than less attention. But the thing about it is, I think that some attention perhaps needs to be given to the caseload of the individual advisor or counselor, because you can't expect them to do something and to work with the people on an individual basis if their time is so extremely limited that they haven't got that kind of time available.
Any other reactions to that? Yes.
My name is Charles Snell, and Mr. Copeland raised...
You are at San Diego State?
Well, I prefer to be a citizen.
All right.
My question would be, how many different kinds of counselors do they have at Lincoln High School? How many different people would a student have to relate to get the full range of counseling that's being offered at Lincoln? Well, I heard a term, 24 counselors. And you hear you have grade level advisors, you hear all these different kinds of people. Isn't there just one person that students can go to relate to get all the information he needs? Does he have to keep bouncing around these different people?
I mean, different kinds of counseling people.
We have some material we'd be happy to pass out or hand out at the end. Maybe this would be better because we're close, but anyone who wants it, here is the material. And there are, in fact, 24 different people who between them served 78 periods of time during the day for a total of 1,111 students. And this is summarized, and to answer the question, because we do have this function of the secondary advisor or grade level advisor, which is both advisor on courses to be taken, schedules to be worked out, and first level referral. This is one for every one of these. But then there would have to be a second person to whom they would go as they get into other problems. And they could do some selecting as to which is their second or third person, depending upon the specialization involved. If it has to do with vocational, then we bring a person in with knowledge on vocational to whom one of the others would refer this individual student for help on his specialized program at this point.
Okay. Mrs. Garcia?
I have several questions I would have liked to have asked and gone into, but since time is limited, I understand somebody said, I guess we're going to stop pretty soon.
We are. If you just put them out there, though, we can pick them up later on if we don't get to them today.
Well, this is my first question is, this is a unified school district, so consequently you are responsible for counseling at the elementary level, is that right, Dr.?
Correct, yep.
Now, is there a possibility of another meeting on this counseling?
Here?
Yes.
Yes.
This dialogue, is it set up so that there might be other meetings on it?
Oh yes, we're not going to by a long shot.
Oh, I see. Okay, because I think maybe I will bring these questions up if I have an opportunity to come again.
If you want to state them now.
Well, my question
but is... You won't get answers today now, I'm saying, if you state them.
Okay. My question is, or rather my statement is, it's not really a question, that I feel we are concentrating again, just as we concentrate wrongly on qualification and training, we are concentrating again on something that has already been created by the time we get to the junior high school and senior high school level. I think we should go back to preschool training and definitely to kindergarten and first grade. I have seen too many things happen to us there. I'm talking in terms of just the brown and black people probably at this point. I've seen too many things happen to us there, which are critical, and thus we end up with the results at junior high school and senior high school level. Now, I think we should concentrate or have one whole session on maybe just what happens at the elementary level and what should happen probably. Now, the other thing is, Dr. Hall is here, and you say we're not through, so I'm glad, because I was concerned that there might not be any follow-up. I would like to know what he's going to do after this. I would like to talk to him again and find out if maybe his attitudes might have changed a little, or maybe if they haven't changed, I'd also like to know that.
So maybe you should answer that last question for me.
Well, there's you can question such that we would have to ask him where was he today, and then where is
where
he then whenever that point comes up. I don't know whether the question as you ask it is appropriate. Now let me go further. I'm not sure it's an appropriate question in terms of our context. I think what is appropriate is during the discussion that we have here that you hear the kind of remark he mentioned earlier, which may be an indication of what you want. For example, when he, Deputy Superintendent, says this is his opinion today, but it might not be tomorrow, that yesterday he thought this way and he's beginning to change now, he's probably saying what you're saying. I think the only appropriate way would be when a particular subject comes up or topic comes up, as they did today, you ask him what is his opinion on that now, and ask him, was it that way then, sometime in the past? Now that would be my reaction to that, as well as with others. But to say you want to measure his change in that way, I'm not sure that question can be answered that way. Do I make any sense to you, though?
Yes,
now, others, do you want to react to that?
No, except as we close this Christmas session, I think we ought to say that this isn't the first meeting that George Hall is in.
I would add
for 2 years that we sat here, and that some of the changes, although I know they're very small, but maybe some of the changes came indirectly from dialogue that has gone on in the past. I think maybe something like that.
And I would add whatever. You want to add something on that point, too? Okay, wait a minute. I think just on that point, there have been others here. Ed Butler left today, and some others who haven't been able to make it lately because of the election, I'd like to think at least, and others, but who have attended regularly, who say many times it hurts them quite much, though you're just talking about George, to have to admit some of the changes they've gone through, and sometimes they say it, and I hope that we have them back and get some reactions to that. For example, now and then we have to stop and say, should this thing go on or shouldn't it? And we stop at that moment and take a whole morning sometimes to decide whether we're just spinning our wheels or are there kinds of results from this kind of talk. And some of them, public officials and so forth, who will say they have changed and they can see themselves as being racist in some areas and this kind of thing. I think this is a kind of answer that you get to your question, not the direct way that you put it. Mary, and then we got two or three. Oh, okay. Okay.
I have another direction to that I'd like to see this discussion take, maybe for the next time. We skirted around it in terms of the importance of attitudes, the teachers, the counselors, the administrators, of the possibility of hiring those who are not credential. And I think we ought to address ourselves to the question again of why we have to consider people who aren't credential. What kinds of people are being produced now who are credential? So I would like to include in the next discussion those people who are responsible for teacher training, for counselor training, for administrative training here in San Diego, and find out what they are doing to be sure that the teachers we are producing in June are the kind of teachers we want that don't need additional in-service training in San
Diego.
So, to that end, Mr. Chairman, could we invite sometime in the future representatives from institutions that are responsible for teacher training,
yeah, right,
and let them answer some of the questions that this dialogue raises.
What about members of the Board of Education? You know, we're talking at Cloister.
They have been invited since this thing opened. We've had attendance from, I think, two, is that right?
Two, that's right.
On the administrative level, I'd like to say that the San Diego City Schools have had at least one representative in every meeting. But when you start talking about the board, we've only had two to come.
And this is where it's at, you know.
But I heard several two other points I mentioned, Mac, yours and Mary's, which I think can be incorporated as we now look at where we're going next time. But before I do
the
that,
the grant for the teacher writers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I want to just react to two things I did hear today. There were several that were said, and I sort of annoyed my head with one side first, one woman, not the other. But one was that
that those persons who are now of minority races who are counselors may be still just as washed as the others. I just thought it's not like this blank type of statement, having been a counselor in a minority race, who also may have had to do something about sensitivity myself. I like to think that because we are a minority, that you're going to have some faith in us that we're doing the job to the best of our ability. The other thing that I like to react to is this idea of hiring persons who are not credentialed or do not have the qualifications. I think that we need as many persons as possible in order to participate in getting this child where we want him to be. But don't slap our credentials and our work in trying to become better qualified in our faces.
All right. Then you want to react that just that?
No, not her question. Rosemary's last one.
All right. This should be the last, I hope.
I assume that the agenda will be headed next time. County community dialogue. Are we going? Is this going to be the drift?
I kind of think it will be county pretty soon. County dialogue.
Because then my thinking, I don't know. County counselors or people in that structure at all. I just wondered if there are any here this time and whether they ought to be part of our concern at the next meeting.
Yes.
San Ybarra has 18% Mexican Americans in their schools.
Yeah, I think we can relate to it the way she's doing it there. As we naturally change structures, we'll have to go back where we were last May, June, July, was it? Before we had that August thing. And we'll have to project the whole thing a little differently, because now that we'll be county, the Sweetwater District people who were here can say now that they are now part of this regular ongoing structure, as opposed to, as you recall, last year when we had to invite them in, and two from my staff went down there before they came and sat with them to try to say, we think you should be here, and this kind of thing. Well, now it's in a bigger umbrella. They can be here without having that qualification. That will go for all of these things now, which means we have to restructure the whole thing now. So I think your point is about taking it.
I think the concerned people here would be better if they would feel that the counselors in the two different structures were relating more to each other and interacting. I don't know whether this takes place now or not. These could be entirely separate lands.
Well, we'll try to bring them together, as you were suggesting, through at least a structural arrangement. Let me ask George now. He had some materials. Can you hold them a minute, and we pass them out just in a second before
none of them need to be passed out. I'm really saying, if you want a statistic on counselors at Lincoln, here's a pack of material. Ask Jack Stone for it.
But before we rise, let's get those out in a moment after I take care of two other things. Estelle, you're having a party.
Well, it's the cooperative at the Linda Vista Neighborhood Service Center is having their first big dance. It's a mariachi dance tomorrow night, and it's they're going to have Christmas goodies. I mean, it's going to have a dinner, but it'll be a Mexican food that is of a festive occasion, and it's
Mexican soul food.
Well, Mexican Christmas food,
Christmas.
Really. Yeah. And the dance includes the food and the dancing for $2 donation, and it's I think it'll be it's a real grassroots organization that's putting it on, and there'll be a bar there, and it's at the UAW Hall at 2226 San Diego Avenue. Now, if any of you want to I have someplace else to go, but would like to buy a ticket for me, I have some, because they do need the money, and I would be very glad to give the ticket to somebody else that may not have the money to go.
Where is it going to be again?
UAW Hall at 2226 San Diego Avenue tomorrow night. That's in Old Town.
What time?
8 to 1.
All right. Now, the last one is the next meeting. The school will not open, correct, George, until the 6th, is that correct? So we had said the last time to have a meeting 2 weeks from today would be the 3rd before school opens. Now that just may be a good time, for that matter. But
it might be a good time, but I hope it would be on a different agenda rather than to be one where we should be lining up school people.
line. Oh, I see what you mean.
I mean, I would hope it would not be on these topics that would expect us to be here on the 3rd.
To bring school people back because you can't contact them before.
That's correct.
Well, then, no, the 10th would be the next week. So, I mean, yeah, the 10th. So the next meeting then, you'll take, make this note, the next meeting will be on January 10th here, as opposed to the regular 2 weeks from today would be 3 weeks from today. Any question on just that change? You got it, Union Tribune?
Bring Ben, some point on the 3rd as a possible date for some youth involvement. Now, it would seem to me that this might be a splendid opportunity since the kids aren't in school. If it's worthwhile to try to set up a session where they have quite a bit of voice about this. And again, I'm just throwing this out. I don't know.
Let's see if we got your idea right.
3 months.
Utilize 2 weeks from today since the kids are out of school to come back here and have a session with youth. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
But you're not asking the school district to have representatives.
I mean, I would think they would want to be here, of course, and probably will. I don't know whether it would deal with counseling or many other concerns.
All right, let's see how that...
I'm not talking about the regular representatives that come every meeting,
right?
But this special contingent...
you have here.
Yeah, you have to make a presentation. You're not asking them to make a presentation.
Or do we even
hear
them
to be here?
I'm trying to get
a regular youth.
Yeah, well, youth are concerned with many more things than school. And so if you're going to have a presentation of youth, I think this is good. But it is a little unrealistic to ask us three times in a row to pull all people out to come to the dialogue.
Yeah, I think that the ingredient must be part of the school people involvement, as he's saying.
And then I'm saying, I'm asking that there not be such a meeting on the 3rd.
Yeah, we're with you on that point. So, Ben, your concept, we think, is a beautiful one that we've talked about, the youth. But it would have to be without, as Max says, a special contingent. And
that
just might not... We take away part of what I think underlies your assumption.
I'm merely presenting an opportunity to perhaps firm up three things that we'd like to hear, the youth point of view, in profusion with representatives.
Yeah, we understand that, but what about the others present here as that goes on is what you're asking.
As the group wishes, I don't think that these gentlemen need be here necessarily, officially, for that at all.
Let's get some reactions to it.
Well, I think they should be here.
You think they should be here?
Well, yeah.
I think that the dialogue can't concentrate solely on the city schools and make us bring five or six top administrators down week after week after week. Now, city school's not the only thing wrong with San Diego.
Yeah, well, that's not what he's saying, guys.
Well, yeah, but three times we've been here. Now we're supposed to come the 4th time.
No, we're getting the action to that. Hold on.
Members of the board instead?
You bring them. You know them. You're the ones who vote for them and put them in office. Why are you going to tell me to bring them? You tell me to bring my employer. You ought to bring them there. You hired them. The public has to say that. Just like the public has to put pressure on the chief of police to put, what are you talking about? You're kidding yourself.
All right, let's get some reactions to that idea.
Mr. Wayman, the kids, even if the school administrators are here or not, we're interpreting some of their problems. We're not hitting the bullseye at all. Maybe what can be is if a youth responds in this thing, they will get, new questions. I mean, they may have questions that we haven't touched, and it might not necessarily have to have any administration, but just to get a youth, there, instead of being interpreted, let them come out with it.
Without the presence of the school people here.
If they want to come find them, not without...
They'll be representative anyway.
The regular one.
Yeah, the regular one.
Right, we're getting ideas on that. The reaction.
Well, I disagree with the gentleman that said that we can't ask the school people to be here. We wouldn't probably... Our police problems, our other total problems with minority group community would be less if we were doing a constructive job on the education level. This is a method of perpetuating our society and making it a good, wholesome society for everybody. This is our job as educators. I mean, this is their job. I'm not saying. This is their job as educators. Now, if there is a session on youth and they choose not to come, they'll be telling us, I mean, I'm not saying invite them formally, but they'll be telling us something very specific. If they don't understand their role as educators, and, you know, I would be saying that they don't understand their role. Nobody asked me to come. I mean, I'm not asked here formally, and nobody pays me, and it's not my school time or vacation time. It's just my time as an interested in citizen.
All right, let's get some more reactions. I want reactions on an idea. The idea is to bring the youth here 2 weeks from today, which means we have to change then the next meeting for 2 weeks after that, rather than to have two in a row here again. I'm getting reactions to the idea that Ben has thrown out. What's the reaction, please?
Well, I feel that probably a meeting with youth involved is a good idea. I mean, there are several dimensions to this specific proposal, and it seems that it would be a good idea. It seems from the standpoint of youth who, as you know, often feel they're just talking and not talking to any effective group anyway, that perhaps through this dialogue, a meeting might be set up at an appropriate time. Perhaps it would be an evening meeting or something like this, at a time when it would be convenient to invite school officials, school board members, and I'm wondering if this proposal could be made jointly, perhaps to the school board too, and have a community meeting in the evening. But I do think that it is a little bit unfair to, during vacation time, expect school officials, school teachers, or even some youth to come. Even though it might be beneficial to let them talk, I think that if you really want to be helpful to them, you'll try and get them the most effective forum that they can have, because I'm sure that Jerry has talked to many youth and is able to mirror what they say. I have and can mirror, I'm sure Michelle has and can mirror, but to be able to get them an effective forum, and this is something that the dialogue could perhaps bring about at a time that would be convenient, not necessarily convenient in that it's easy for everyone, but to make it during a holiday time when everyone's maybe gone at that.
Some more reactions, please. You're saying that you don't think the next 2 weeks would be the time to get them to forum and so forth.
No, I think perhaps when you're about to, after you've had another meeting here to deal some of the elementary, that might be a time to consider getting a dialogue to
all right
together.
Reactions to that, Jerry?
I think that's a very good approach. I think that you have to have some time to determine what it is you want to produce with the youth here, and we've just thrown this out. And I feel they're at a disadvantage, and if we as adults are going to deal with them and let them talk, then we must give them an effective forum where they're going to be heard, and just doing it during a holiday isn't going to do it.
Lynn?
Well, I'm not in favor of a meeting on January the 3rd. Period.
All right. Mary?
I agree. I think it's unfair to ask people who are planning for a Tuesday vacation or something to interrupt whatever plans they have to be here and then blame them because you're not.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Don?
I would say no for January 3rd.
Any others?
No.
I'm just
simply,
yes?
We'll take
your idea because it crystallized. A lot of things have been said. Good idea. Add it to what else has been said and see if we can provide the most effective forum. We will not then do it according to the meeting next meeting. The next meeting then for this would be, Dr. Hall, January 10th. They have some materials there for those who'd like to pick it up. Have a Merry Christmas, holiday, whatever. See you then.